Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Here we are once again on the Gravity Commons Podcast. I'm joined today by Christy. We got rid of Ben. Christy, what'd you do to Ben?
I don't know where he is, but I'm sure he'll be back next week.
I think he will be back next week. Ben has a constellation of antipathies that need, maintenance and check-ins. And so probably he's doing something like that,
It's either... No, he's doing something very important.
Yeah, you think so?
That's what I believe.
Okay, yeah. Let's go with that. I think that's the most charitable way to describe his absence. Maybe next week he can give an accounting for himself. Christy, you were telling me about you're building a he shed, she shed.
Well, so here's the deal. It has been the secret, but we are pre-recording this intro, and it's going to come out on Tuesday, and then it won't be a secret, so I can tell you all of you people. My husband's been in Africa for the last 2 weeks, and we had this she shed, which I called it a she shed, because in over COVID, it was like my office. I took everything out of there. By now, it's like junk. It's like all the kids' toys, all the bikes, all the
everything. Can I get the listener just a image? It's basically a backyard barn. It's a backyard shed.
It's very small.
Yes.
It's very small.
Yeah, like okay. 9 feet by 9 feet or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ripped out the car. I took everything out. I ripped out the carpeting. I ripped out the ceiling because it does look like a barn in the sense of there's rafters and stuff. So there was exposed just wood.
Yeah.
And then we redid it. And I put like a very small leather love seat and a cowhide rug and this barrel that you can like hold like whiskey and glasses in, and it's his Father's Day present, and he's going to get it on Sunday.
And he doesn't know this is happening.
He has, my favorite moment was that I actually brought out an electrician, and he brought electricity to it, and I did not want to pay the $600 that the electrician was going to like actually put the wires in like the sockets and mm-hmm. the light switch. I'm like, no, I can figure that out. And I did.
Yes.
I felt very proud of myself. So it even has electricity.
Did you like watch a YouTube video?
I asked a friend and he was like, okay, the black goes to the yellow. Black and yellow, black and yellow. He like sang this song. And and so then I wired like the black wire to the gold. And anyway, we did it. I couldn't believe it. So
wow.
Anyway, I'm excited to show it to him.
Well, last time Paul and I hung out was earlier this year on my sabbatical, and he was telling me about this dream he had to build, I think he called it whiskey and leather.
He wanted a whiskey and leather room. And then before he went to Africa, we had a whole conversation about, let's not spend thousands and thousands of dollars building a new shed. Let's just use the old shed that we had. And he was like, it will never work, Christy. And look it, I made it work. Oh, man.
Did you enjoy this project? Was this like fun for you, or was it like a burden? You just needed to get it done, but no, you'll appreciate the gift it is to Paul. Like, did you enjoy the process as much as you enjoy the destination?
It was stressful, and it was fun. It was both. I think it was both. I don't spend that kind of money without Paul and I like talk about all the things. So that felt a little stressful. Like to bring an electrician and bring some electricity there, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Hence why I was trying to save the $600. So that part was stressful, but overall it was fun. I just hope he likes it.
Well, he was, I tried to pull out of him his timetable for this thing, and he was like, this is just a dream right now. Like, and he told me how much electricity would cost and everything else. Yeah. So will you like record a video of him when he sees it? Get like one of the kids maybe to do it or something.
I know. Right.
I think it would be cool to see the moment he walks into the backyard. And
well, the thing is that it looks the same from the outside right now. So like the only way he's going to know that it's not bikes and junk in there is if he actually opened the door and went in and saw all the things. So
have you planned out how you're going to get him to open the door?
No, I need like help. So if you have any suggestions.
Well, sometimes you and your children are outdoor people, you know, you hang out in the backyard. Yeah. So maybe like there's some under the auspices of being in the backyard, maybe Paul's grilling on Sunday or maybe, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell him that you need something from the shed that is too heavy for you to lift.
Okay.
And that's ask a good if he'll idea. Go get it. And then while
and
his
then
back's
we'll
turned,
I'll be there.
Yeah. You can all sneak up on him, like gather around
that's,
him.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yep. So it was a lot of work.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it was.
But it's done. I should take a picture. I'll send you a picture.
Ooh, that'd be cool. Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see it. Yeah. And then next time I'm there, I want to sit in it.
Yes, you will. I have an air purifier. I have an exhaust fan. I mean, I did all the things to make sure he could smoke a cigar in there.
Yeah.
So.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Look at
so
you.
So we'll see. Hopefully.
And it was super hot. It was super hot this week and you sweated it out.
104 degrees yesterday, y'all. It was nuts.
You know what's interesting is we had crazy storms here yesterday. The day you had record temps, we had like tornadoes touching down and all kinds of wild things happening. So it was a wild weather day in the States yesterday. Well, we should maybe get into this chat we had with Rob Dixon. Because it was productive and jovial.
Yeah. Yes, he's a good guy.
He is. He's the author of Together in Ministry, Women and Men in Flourishing Partnerships, and the co-author with his wife, Amy, of the picture book, Penny Preaches. In addition to serving on InterVarsity Christian Fellowship staff for almost 30 years, he teaches at Fuller Theological Seminary and Fresno Pacific University. Today, we're chatting with him about his latest book, Allies in Ministry, How Men Can Support Women in God's Mission. Let's get into it with Rob. Rob, welcome back to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Rob, you seem to write about men and women in ministry a lot, which
is
great, which is great. I mean, this is, one of the reasons why we like talking to you. Would you share a bit of your story with us? How did that become an area of particular interest or concern for you?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks for having me. And good observation, Matt. Yes, this is my lane, I think, at this point, I'm comfortable saying. When you get to a point, you sort of look back and you can see how God was sort of working and putting the pieces together to get you where you are. And for me, I think it started, I mean, I grew up, what's your foundations? What's your sovereign foundations, to use a term, right? And for me, that was growing up in a home that valued women. Women carried a lot of the spiritual freight in my house growing up, as part of a church growing up where women could lead and serve. And they weren't perfect, but women could preach and things like that. Then I got to ministry. I'm in my 30th year of ministry this year. And there's a lot of change that happens in ministry. But one through line for me is I've always worked with women. So I've been supervised by women multiple times. I've supervised women as partners and peers in various configurations. And all the way through, I think I've had this curiosity. Are we doing this well? Can we be doing this better as we partner together as women and men? And maybe I'll tell a specific story of a moment that really galvanized me from sort of this posture of having, I have a value for women in leadership to a conviction about women in leadership. And I think there's a pivot that needs to happen there. So the story is, at one point I was meeting with a student who had been invested in by my wife, Amy, the year prior. So when we had up-and-coming leaders, we assigned them to Amy for mentoring and guidance. And so at that point, we had invested in her to invest in these students. And so she spent a year with him. And at the end of the year, he said to Amy the thing that all ministers long to hear. It was like, I've grown more this year under your leadership than in any year prior in my life with God. Thank you so much. It's like the quote that you put on the board for when ministry days are hard, right?
Yeah.
Fast forward a few months, I'm sitting with the same student. He's telling me about his conversion to complementarian theology, which is a more restrictive view of women and men in ministry. And I'm asking him lots of questions. He's telling me about his journey. And at the end of the conversation, I ask him the question I've been wanting to ask him since the beginning. I say, I know what you told Amy last year, that you grew more under her leadership than any year prior in your life with God, and you're so thankful. And I want to know how you're holding that in light of what you're expressing about your theology. He takes a second, thinks it over, looks at me, and he says, that was God using Amy in spite of her disobedience. Ooh. And that's a moment for me. I mean, a lot of things going on in my head in that moment, including wanting to smack him in the head. But right. I think for me, that was a galvanizing moment of shifting from, yeah, this is important, sure, yeah, women should lead, to, yeah, we're going to do something about this and have a conviction about this, and I'm going to act in response to this. And so I think you can draw a through line from kind of that moment and moments like that to the books that I'm putting out in the world today. Sorry, long answer, but that's a there's no. a story there. Yep.
I feel like I'm still regulating myself from that story.
Yeah. Yes.
Man, you use the word ally early mm-hmm. on in your book. Mm-hmm. And you talk about this male allyship in relationship to women in ministry. Can you unpack that a bit for us? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I like the term ally. It's, I mean, it's not without baggage. Most terms are. So it needs definition, and you'll find that in the first chapter of my book. For me, I like the term ally because I think I view it as a broad term, like an umbrella term. And there are different allyship behaviors or roles that fit underneath that umbrella, if that makes sense. And so there's one author, I quote this in the book, where she's identified seven different roles that allies play. Sponsor, you know, champion, advocate, but then also scholar, confidant. And there's seven different roles, upstander. There's seven different roles that allies play. And I sort of like the diversity of that. It's mm-hmm. not one size fits all. I think the task for an ally is to discern, maybe even in real time, what's the right role to play here. And actually, what's the right role that fits me and who I am and my temperament and things like that. So there's diversity within that. So for that reason, I like that term ally.
Well, and you have like four key concepts, right, of allyship, like privilege and empathy mm-hmm. and internal development, like all of these. Can you just pick one? Give us a story of how you like of how it was played out.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Allies are understanding their privilege. They're with empathy moving to make change, both at two levels, the interpersonal level and then the systemic level. I think oftentimes one of the things that differentiates allies is it's not just a one-on-one interpersonal, it's actually a systemic advocacy.
Yeah.
It's one of the key differentiators there. I mean, I think for me, I'm probably most comfortable. I just talked about how there's diversity within how allies express their allyship. And for me, I'm most comfortable interpersonally. So mm-hmm. I want to get to know someone, understand their world, ask a bunch of questions, walk in their shoes if I can, and then seek ways within my purview to like sponsor them or advocate for them. You know, and so I try to do that lots of different ways. I'll tell a quick story. So a number of years ago, I got invited to be an MC at a conference. Mm-hmm. Great honor to do that. I felt like that conference would be better if there were women and men up front more. And so my question to the organizers would it be okay with you if I invite a woman from my networks to co-MC with me? And they were like, we've never done that before. That seems strange. There's lots of complexities to work through. Who gets the honorarium? Things like that. We worked through all that. And you know, the value add to the conference was significant, I think. And for me, just way more joyful to work with someone, to partner with someone in that way. So that's one example of you're sort of making space as an ally. I'm trying to make space for a woman in my network to have an experience that she probably wouldn't have in a different way.
Well, I want to tackle this word privilege.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a contested
yeah.
maybe concept, right? And we hear all kinds of different privilege. There's you know, white privilege, we hear sure. class privilege, neurotypical privilege. but this is one of the key concepts of what it means to be an ally. So would you help us understand more what you're referring to when you use the word like male privilege?
Yeah, yeah. It's a systematized advantage based on some sort of characteristic, right? So that's my sort of you know, baseline definition. So there's, to put it colloquially, I like to talk about how the playing field tilts in my favor because I'm a guy, right? So things are just easier for me. For example, when I walk in a room, people are more likely generally to hear what I have to say, to listen to me. People defer to me. I get more access to, when someone's looking for an MC for a conference, they call Rob. They may not call someone, a woman in this case, right? So I think it's that understanding that the world tilts in my favor because I'm a man, and being aware of that, I think that's the first step, is awareness, and then looking to for ways to leverage, I'll use that word, to leverage your privilege to bless other people, mm-hmm. which is the way of Jesus, which is the way of the cross, yeah. in a lot of ways, right? I mean, Philippians 2 for me is a core Philippians 2, the Christ hymn there is a core text for me when I think about privilege. What does Jesus do with his privilege? He doesn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but lets go of that, is incarnate, and then takes the cross, right? And so I think that's a pretty good model for what it looks like, for what you do when you have privilege, is you hold it like this and you use it to bless others.
Yeah.
I think that's really helpful, Rob, because I think one of the maybe a couple wrong-headed approaches that people have, because it's uncomfortable mm-hmm. to realize that, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Because Journey. It's like, well, I didn't ask for this, and yep. I didn't try to get this, and I'm not a bad person, and yep. you know what I mean? All of that. And so I think one, you know, wrong-headed approach is to pretend it doesn't exist or to minimize its effect, you know, like, oh, that's yep. not really true, or, you know, that kind of thing. Or to internalize it as an indictment against mm-hmm. you personally yes. as an individual. Yeah. And feel like you have to defend yourself against it, mm-hmm. and or make like wish it wasn't there, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I like what you're saying here, that no, the approach is to recognize it is there, and there's nothing you can actually do about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Its presence, you know.
Yeah.
Grew up in a patriarchal society. We have male privilege.
Yep.
But what we can do, the best thing we can do with it, is to recognize that it's there, and instead of sort of mindlessly trade on it.
Yep.
We can just begin to, I like your word leverage, you know, we can mm-hmm. leverage that for the benefit of those who don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
As best we can.
Yeah.
Recognizing that we do have it.
Yeah. Maybe Ben, just to go off that for a second. I mean, for me, it's the same question as like all the things that I have on my screen as a person, right? Like everything I have belongs to Jesus. And I get to ask Jesus, or I should ask Jesus, what would you have me do with it all? Whether it's my car, mm-hmm. you know, my future, my bank account, like it all belongs to my privilege. It all belongs to Jesus. And so what would you have me do with this, Lord, to benefit your people and advance your mission, I think is the core question for people.
Yeah. That's great. You know, another, maybe a related question. So many of us who are men, present company, not fully included, Christy, but if many of us who are men, we've experienced, when we've tried to be allies for mm-hmm. Women or allies of women, we've experienced pushback for trying to do that. And you talk a little bit about this in your book, of framing that as not only unavoidable, but also perhaps necessary mm-hmm. For us to endure as we become faithful allies. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about that, some of the pushback that we get, and how does that help us actually?
Yeah. Yeah. Pushback, not fun for sure. But I think I write about this in the book a little bit, Ben. I'm toying with the, I think if you're aspiring to be an ally and you haven't experienced some degree of pushback, my question would be, are you doing enough? Or are you being courageous enough? Are you bold enough in your allyship? Sure. I think it does come with the territory, and it's a reality. It's one of the places where I think men can opt off the allyship pathway because it's just hard. It's hard to be sort of publicly sometimes, or even privately, you know, have someone treat you poorly or judge you harshly or whatever. I mean, that's just a challenge, right? So pushing through that, I think, is a core competency. It's a core part of the development of an ally identity. I'll give a quick story from the book. I have a younger staff I was mentoring for a long time. He had some convictions about women in the ministry and wanted to be an ally, found himself in a meeting where they were planning who would come and speak at an event. And all the names that went on the whiteboard were male names. And so he's sitting in this room thinking, Lord, is this my moment? Is this my moment? Hmm. Yes, he felt like it was. So he blurted out, I don't think it was super eloquent, but he sort of got it out there, hey, could we put a woman on the list? And it was the most awkward moment of his life, I think, to that point. It was like some people said something, mumbled something. Someone said, well, we don't really do that. But then it was mute, awkward, and then the leader just moved on with the meeting. And for him, it was this like kind of to like put Humpty Dumpty back together again kind of moment when he came back and we met. And he was like, this was really hard. I felt unlistened to. No one responded to me. Like it was awkward. And so to his credit, I mean, we worked this through and he went and tried it again. So he went for another round. It didn't end up happening. But I think that process of working through pushback and moving ahead anyway was really formational for him. I mean, he's like a stage 6 or 7, to use my language from my book, ally at this point, moving ahead. So that was a galvanizing experience for him.
Well, it's fascinating from a women's perspective too. When I see men doing that, mm-hmm. even if nothing changes, even if it's kind of ignored or whatever, there's something in me that is like, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for trying. Thank mm-hmm. you for like speaking up or saying something. And so, which is good for me to just hear that, to be able to go back to some men and be like, mm-hmm. hey, thanks for putting your neck out there. Yeah. Even if, you know, whatever. Go ahead, Ben.
I suppose, Christy, we don't know even, like, maybe no women got on the speaker docket, but who knows what else changed, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Maybe nobody's ever heard that brought up before, and now that's the lens they see a lot of things through. It's like, oh, I haven't really ever thought about that. Yeah. I wonder why I don't think about women coming to speak at our institution. Yeah.
I like to hope for that, Ben, but I think mm-hmm. the biggest thing that changed that moment was for my friend.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think all of a sudden he's put his convictions on the line.
Yes.
And there's something formational in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listener, if you are looking for ways to get more deeply involved in what we do at Gravity and at the same time support the work that we're doing, I might invite you to think about spiritual direction.
Yeah, Thursdays are one of my favorite days because Thursday I meet with my friend Courtney for spiritual direction. And it's a conversation that we have an hour long. And we talk about where are you noticing God's activity in your life? And we do that together.
Well, that sounds great, Ben. Could you give us a definition? What do you think spiritual direction is?
I'm actually finishing up school for spiritual direction. And that was one of the assignments, was to kind of write out your own version of it. Here's what mine is. Spiritual direction is a process of prayerful conversation that facilitates growing awareness of God's presence and involvement in your ordinary life. That invites you deeper into surrender to God's love and a fuller participation in the life that God shares with us. So yeah, if you're interested, go to gravitycommons.com/direction and obviously reach out. If you have any questions about that, you can email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com.
Well, another concept that you name that I think is really helpful, you call it disruptive encounters. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. this kind of experience that disorients and challenges. Yeah. It causes friction in our meaning-making system of the world. Mm-hmm. And some of us find these threatening and negative, right? Yeah. But you have more of a transformative vision of how they function in allyship. I wonder, can you double-click on that for us a little bit?
Yeah. Well, Christy, I like how you put it. Yes. I try to view dissonance as an opportunity to grow and develop. I think we tend, our first impulse is to dismiss dissonance or to get through it as quickly as possible. But is it possible that dissonance is actually a fertile ground for Jesus to work? And I think you think of Paul, the Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus. I mean, that is the dissonant moment of his life. And what ends up happening, right? He finds himself in a community that empowers him and becomes the Paul we know in the epistles. So I think dissonance, the word on the street is it's not good. We got to get rid of it, have an allergy to dissonance. But the reality is it can be a really vibrant place of growth and development. And so I think for male allies, certainly true. Dissonance, like pushback, is the second place where men can opt off the pathway because they don't want to go through that or it's too much. So that is one downside. But for the most part, when I see men walk through that disruptive encounter stage or phase, it's really powerful to watch. I mean, it's because it can ultimately transform their worldview. Sometimes it takes more than one sort of disruptive encounter, right? But it can reorient their life. And all of a sudden, we talked about privilege a minute ago. Okay, I can see it now. It's like you're in water. You can't see. You don't know that you're in water. But now all of a sudden, you're like aware of what's going on around you. You see the world differently. It's super. It's almost breathtaking for me to watch people walk through that part of the process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm thinking of the like pushback and disruptive encounters as like that we have a lot of psychological defense mechanisms when we find out that we're wrong, when our good motives or intent isn't valued or foregrounded, right? Somebody's talking about our impact and we're like, but you don't know my heart. You don't know what I intended. And I think a lot of what you're naming to become an ally, Rob, is that sometimes we call it emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call it metacognition. We have to be able to have a modicum of distance to be able to look at ourselves, look at our life, be curious about psychological defense mechanisms so they don't run our life.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and I don't know, honestly, I don't know how we... There's just some people that seem unwilling or incapable of doing that. Have you had any luck? have you made any headway in helping people become the kinds of people who are able to do this work when maybe they aren't predisposed to do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know of any solution to that, Matt, other than to keep presenting the dissonance, or to keep putting. So like if I have a student, let's say I work with college students in my ministry, let's say I have a student that doesn't seem to get it, doesn't want to get it, isn't willing to get it, but they're still around. They haven't left yet, in other words, and found a different community to be a part of. I think my commitment is let's just keep pressing in, keep leading that person into places of displacement, into places that will challenge their worldview, and hope that at some point something cracks or something breaks or something, there's a moment where they're caused to go, well, wait a second, actually, right? So I don't know of a different way to do it other than to keep at it, right? So as long as someone's willing to be in community with me and a part of the community that I'm leading or a part of, I'm just going to try to be faithful to keep leading them into that place. And sometimes that means I'm saying things to them. Sometimes, hey, come with me, let's go. And there's a woman pastor preaching at the church or whatever. And I'm just trying to create those dissonant moments. I think sometimes disruptive encounters just happen. But one of the points I try to make in the book is we can actually be proactive about them. And the church can think about, what's a disruptive encounter I can create for young men here that will try to shake the tree and create an environment where they feel dissonance and they can grow out of that, right? So, yeah, being proactive and intentional about that, I think, is my best answer to your really good question. And maybe one other thing to say too, that and praying, right? I mean, like, I think that patriarchy, someone used that word earlier, that's a spiritual stronghold that grips the church and has for generations. And so we should be praying about that, and we should be praying that men can think outside of that construct and move towards wholeness and healing, right? So I think, that intentional sort of creating disruptive encounters and then praying for guys as they enter into them, those would be two things I would be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, Rob, I was going to just point out.
Yeah,
I do have a question. Okay, sometimes I think we've learned to read the scriptures in such a way that we don't necessarily see sometimes some of the examples of, you know, what we like male allyship. Obviously that's a very newfangled concept. Yeah. You know, that's a new word. And I think sometimes the pushback that I've heard from people who value the scriptures and they value, you know, faith is just like, is this just kind of newfangled kind of cultural, like political correctness? I guess people don't use that word as much anymore, but but I, you know, in this book, you talk about, you ground this in examples from scripture. And so, and you mentioned earlier that, you know, part of following Jesus is sort of offering all of that we have, you know, our privilege. I wonder if you could just pick one or two examples from scripture and share how these figures or stories teach us to be allies.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ben. I mean, the Sunday school answer would be Jesus, right? I mean, to look at Jesus and the life of Jesus and how Jesus interacts with him.
It's a good answer.
On bad footing if you're talking about Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, but to look at every encounter with Jesus in the Gospels where he's interacting with a woman, I mean, there's lots of quotes I could marshal here, but I remember one of them, I think it's Walter Wink says, he's violating the social customs or mores of his time in every single encounter recorded with women in the Gospels. And there's something he's doing that's out of order, so to speak. And in the most patriarchal of ages, Jesus is transgressing the culture in some form or fashion each time he does that, right? And so I talked earlier about the different hats that allies wear, and you can find Jesus wearing all of those hats. Now, Jesus didn't have the language of allyship. He didn't use the language of allyship. He didn't talk about, oh, I'm an upstander now. Like, he didn't do that, but you can sort of use that term and look back at the story of Jesus and mm-hmm. see him doing all of those things, right? And folks read, it's chapter 4 in my book. You look at Jesus as an ally. I mean, the other story I would tell, Ben, is Boaz in the Old Testament, right? And I mean, we go all the way back. I mean, the OG mm-hmm. kind of male ally, I think, would be Boaz in a lot of ways. And, you know, he's functioning in multiple levels with Ruth as an ally and Naomi as an ally, right? So mm-hmm. for one thing, he's saying, glean in my fields. That's commanded in the scripture, in the Old Testament law. But he's saying, I'm going to go a step further and tell the men not to harass you and to protect you. So that's mm-hmm. that's allyship right there. And then, of course, mm-hmm. you know, the kinsman redeemer choice to make that he makes in that book is also an example of what it means to be an ally. So I think Boaz flowing all the way through, there's probably some Old Testament examples, but more Jesus, Paul, Peter. I think you've got examples of allyship from all of those guys in the most patriarchal of settings.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I've certainly been in church systems that have not supported women being fully mm-hmm. empowered and trusted in ministry. I know Matt and Ben have also been in situations like that. And our listeners, there's lots of listeners that not only have been, but maybe find themselves currently in mm-hmm. church systems like that, where male allyship isn't valued and mm-hmm. and maybe even seen as a threat.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could speak just a little bit about what have you learned mm-hmm. is valuable or helpful to do in those situations, and how do you discern mm-hmm. whether or not to stay and to work on change or to leave because you know, the system is harming women.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question, Christy. Yeah. I get that question a lot, mostly from women that are like, hey, I'm in the system. It limits my ability to express my calling and my giftings. What do I do? But also from men. So I think a couple things. One is, I think the question is Jesus calling you to stay? Which may sound trite as a question, but I think it's a legitimate, it's the question that needs to be asked. Is Jesus calling you to stay and to be prophetic and to try to bring change within your system? That's mm-hmm. a totally legitimate way to go. And if the answer to the question is yes, that Jesus is calling you to stay, then my question then is, well, what do you need to stay and be healthy?
Yes.
Like, and how can the community come around you and support you? And like, what do you need so that you can endure when things are hard and when you run into the power structures that would keep you from expressing? So that, I think that's one category. If the answer to the question is no, then I think the question for someone like me as a colleague or as a peer or as a someone in their community is, well, how do I help you leave well mm-hmm. and walk with you on that journey? Because that's not an easy journey either. Especially I'm thinking of a friend of mine who was a part of a church, you know, for generations in her family. Like her great grandparents were buried in the church graveyard, and all of a sudden she's feeling like she needs to leave. That's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And so, I think ultimately, what's Jesus saying? And then what does the community? What do you need from the community in order to either stay or leave well? Those would be the questions I think I would be asking.
That's good. That's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. A recipe for misery is to try to change people who don't want to change.
Yeah.
It really can be, you can wear yourself out.
Yeah.
Rob, this has been wonderful. There's so much of your experience and wisdom in this book, along with like you named rooting it in scripture. How often, I mean, almost every encounter that Jesus has with women, I need to teach a class. I need to write something up about this, but there's a same, you use the word leveraging mm-hmm. and Jesus does the same leveraging of his power unto their benefit, mm-hmm. so that they yeah. accrue social honor mm-hmm. that he could have claimed, but he sure. and that's kind of akin to, hey, well, can I ask a female friend to help me MC this event? There's mm-hmm. Giving access to resources mm-hmm. Or power that otherwise they wouldn't have access to.
Yeah.
And I wonder, as we close, like, you are naming, I think, one of the ways that love works. I mean, Ben and I wrote about this, mm-hmm. love always reckons with power. God's love mm-hmm. always reckons mm-hmm. with power. Mm-hmm. But this call to be an ally, it places demands on how we embody power and authority. Mm-hmm. And yeah. sometimes that can be challenging for us. So what have you learned about what this requires in terms of how we carry power as you sought yeah. to be an ally for women?
Yeah, I love that question. I've yet to meet a community that talks too much about power, by the way. Like yeah. I just, the question of like, what's your philosophy or theology on power, I think is a really great question for a church community to wrestle with and mm-hmm. think about together. Anyway, I think for me, I mentioned earlier Philippians 1 and Jesus' sort of choice, or Philippians 2, my apologies, to take that journey. I think that's the journey I want to be on my whole life. And to choose into allyship is to follow Jesus on that road. And that can mean a loss of power. It can mean less prestige. But that is to my benefit as a guy. That benefits my formation. Yeah. I'm more Christ-like, I think, when I hold power like this, as opposed to holding power, you know, with a clenched fist, right? So I think that's to my benefit. And I long for the men in my life to make that journey with me. And the men that I work with, I think all guys need to make that journey. It's hard. I mean, I think there's a writer named Karen Catlin. She's written a book called Better Allies, which is to me just a wonderful writing on this from a secular perspective, but she contrasts an ally with a knight in shining armor. And her thing is, knights in shining armor come in, swoop in, save the day. The glory goes to the knight, and you ride off into the sunset with your, you know, damsel in distress or whatever the metaphor is. That's not what we're looking for here. In that metaphor, the knight keeps the power. We're looking for an ally who will consistently come alongside a marginalized group, in this case, women, and say, the power I have is yours, and let's use it together to be a blessing to the community. So yeah, I think it's a formational journey for guys.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. And I was recently hanging out with some United Methodist pastors, and after the week-long workshop was over, I had lunch with a woman who was a pastor, and she was talking about how often, I don't know, Christy, if I've told you this story yet, how often after she preaches, a guy will come up to her and touch her.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. That's real. Like,
place his hand on their shoulder. Yep. And she says, the other guys in the church, when they preach, they never receive any remarks or compliments about their outfit. And she said, I get touched and I get compliments about my outfit all the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it was an awareness. So there is like a power thing. Like mm-hmm. I'm a touchy person, and I've learned to like ask for consent before I touch people.
Yep.
Is it okay if I put my hand on your shoulder? Even that, sometimes it can be hard for, like, as a pastor, for a woman to say no to a pastor. That can be mm-hmm. difficult, right? For them to do that. Maybe it has nothing to do with me. Maybe it has to do with the way they've been harmed in the past, or if they don't feel like there would be, they can, you know, they don't want to create friction or conflict, so they just mm-hmm. say yes. So I'm learning that, like, to become an ally isn't like, you don't get a card in a mail that just, you know, where you're verified, but it's like this ongoing learning mm-hmm. Throughout life. And I feel like your book and the other books you've written really help us to engage in that journey, not just as a good idea, but as a part of our sanctification, as a mm-hmm. part of our becoming more like Jesus and growing in the fruit of the Spirit. So thanks, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen to all that, Matt. Can I just add one quick thing?
Yeah.
It is about sanctification, development as an ally, but it's also about I think the expansion of the mission. Reality is, if I don't cause the woman you're mentioning there to feel awkward, to feel like, well, this is weird, it feels unsafe here, she's able to lead out of her gifting and her passion and her calling in a fully kind of embodied way. And we need that. We need that for the mission of God. I mean, we've been trying to do God's mission with half the team in some ways relegated to the bench, and it's time to change that up, right? So I think choosing to be an ally, doing no harm, which is the story you're telling there, I think is a great way to create safe space for women to be who they are. And that's what the church desperately needs unto mission.
Yeah. Yeah. What a gift it would be if the church became known as a place that was safe and healthy and good for women. Yeah,
maybe so.
The book again is called Allies in Ministry: How Men Can Support Women in God's Mission. Rob, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.